everybody. My name is Allison Littlefield, and I am part of the Lemelson Honors Program Senior Cohort of 2020. The title of my thesis is Belonging to the Tribe, New Age Spiritualities and the Erasure of Indigeneity in Pisac, Peru. In the summer of 2018, I traveled to Peru for fun with another group of anthropology students I met in community college. We went for the same reasons many people do, to see Machu Picchu and experience all the other well-preserved Incan sites that exist in the Sacred Valley. One of these sites, that rests between Machu Picchu and Cusco, is located just above the town of Pisac, a sleepy Quechuan village with floors made of stone and houses made of adobe. There were a handful of tourists that looked like us, Patagonia brand backpacks, big hiking shoes, and that made sense. Many other people took colectivos and tourist buses for day hikes from Cusco to these mountains, but there was another group that caught me off guard. White people wearing ponchos, dreaded hair, big crystal necklaces, no shoes. So as we sat in a restaurant waiting for the taxi to bring us back to Cusco, I started Googling around. Why does it look like Woodstock all over this remote Andean village? That's when I found the blog post written by anthropologist and travel writer Simon Ugler, who had a lot to say about Pisac. He explained that Western travelers were flooding Pisac because of the Sacred Valley Tribe, a group of neo-shamans from Lima that put on ayahuasca retreats primarily for Westerners. And he felt strongly that this was akin to settler colonialism and that this influx of people was doing harm to the people who traditionally practiced ayahuasca. I always believed that travel and cultural exchange was an overwhelmingly positive thing, and I became obsessed with thinking about how maybe I had inadvertently done harm without realizing it. So when I found out about the Lemelson Research Program here at UCLA, I knew I had to go back and investigate. And I ended up coming to much of the same conclusions as the original blog post. I argue that the New Age movement as a whole disregards calls from indigenous groups to change the way they interact with indigenous practices. I argue that the New Age community views itself as inheritors of indigenous spiritualities, thereby erasing indigenous worldviews while co-opting practices. The ayahuasca neo-shamans in Pisac, along with the rest of the New Age community that has been built around them, have eliminated indigenous peoples from the public practice and marketing of plant medicine and other ceremonies. This erasure is consistent with other instances of settler colonial attitudes and actions, as laid out by scholars such as Veracini and Wolfe. So what does any of that mean? When I returned to Pisac, I found out a lot more than ayahuasca was being done here, and realized this phenomenon isn't particular to just Pisac. This community was part of the larger New Age spiritual community, a collection of spiritualities which is most often practiced by middle-class Westerners and is characterized by a borrowing from an eclectic amalgam of beliefs and practices in search of personal transformation and spiritual growth. Within this community, there were many different yoga studios, Hindu kirtan practices, sweat lodges, meditation, basically a random combination of indigenous spiritualities from all over the world. Pisac is one of many spiritual hubs, with connections to Sedona, Arizona in the United States, Ubud in Bali, and San Marcos La Laguna in Guatemala. Indigenous peoples, most notably American Indians, have made it clear they do not condone these practices. The Southwestern American Indian Movement released a statement in 1984 characterizing New Age spiritualities as a direct attack and theft from Indian people, and announced that they condemn those who seek to profit from Indian spiritualities. The National Congress of Indians in 1993 approved a declaration of war against those they accused of exploiting sacred rituals, citing non-Indian wannabes, hucksters, cultists, commercial profiteers, and self-styled New Age shamans. There have been many clashes since. But ayahuasca in particular is an important practice in understanding what's going on with indigenous peoples in Peru, both in the jungle and in the Andes. Ayahuasca is an hallucinogenic plant mixture containing the psychoactive harmala alkaloids and dimethyltryptamine, or more commonly known as DMT. Ayahuasca uses in Peru were traditionally centralized near Iquitos, in the northern Amazonian region, where Shipibos, traditional ayahuasca pourers, went through years of training, maintained a strict and limited diet, even going through years in isolation, before being trusted to safely administer ayahuasca. But this all changed after an American conference and a National Geographic spread promoting ayahuasca to tourists changed the flow of outsiders from 200 in 2005 to thousands in 2006. As these numbers have continued to grow, more and more people who have not been properly trained are holding expensive and dangerous ceremonies. Many of the so-called shamans in Pisac are from outside of Peru and have participated in shamanic training rituals, where one can live in the jungle for months, even years at a time, paying a lot of money to study ayahuasca under someone claiming to be a real Shipibo, but who may or may not be indigenous and may or may not have the training necessary to ensure the safety of folks consuming this highly psychoactive substance. Some people in PSOC thought that the neo-shamans of the Sacred Valley tribe really knew what they were doing, and they deserved the spotlight they've gotten for bringing ayahuasca to new groups of people. Others felt that it didn't matter how you took ayahuasca, whether in the jungle or from a neo-shaman, as long as you personally had the right intentions with the plant. Still, others expressed concerns. One person said, "I cannot believe someone that goes 6 months to the jungle then comes back a shaman." Another person said, quote, "I think you also get a lot of people who feel a bit lost. It feels like PSOC can sometimes be a magnet for that." Expressing concerns over the overuse and abuse of ayahuasca by some of the people in PSOC. These concerns were mirrored by ayahuasca tourist scholars Marlene Dobkins de Rios and Roger Rumreel, who noted that the cultural and ritual context for drug use is crucial in minimizing abuse, and that with white neo-shamans, these contexts have been erased. I argue that besides having an effect on tourists, neo-shamans also have an effect on indigenous peoples whom they are mimicking. For this, I refer to Standing Rock Sioux scholar Philip DeLoria and Cherokee scholar Raina Green's work on the theory of playing Indian. They point out that after the rise of industrial capitalism in the United States, people turned to American Indians to reconstruct the rugged ideals of the American frontier. You saw the rise of scouting, the Boy Scouts, Campfire Girls, a whole movement conflating outdoor activity with American Indians. This then turned into a dismissal of Indian understandings over their own traditions, with the claim that modern Indians were part of the same modern industrialization and had therefore lost their Indianness. The idea was that if Indians were going to give up their ways of life, it was the duty of white Indian hobbyists to collect and reconstruct authenticity. Both Green and Dobkins de Rios believe that this removal of Indians from their practices represents a psychological death of indigenous peoples in the minds of those white practitioners. If Indians no longer exist, white people then set themselves up to be heirs to these traditions. In neo-shamanism, there's no longer a need for any indigenous peoples in the process. A generation of people have learned from indigenous peoples in the Amazon and have determined that their understandings of these practices are superior in their spiritual depth, and so the neo-shamans in PSOC have positioned themselves as the people most well-equipped to pass these practices on to tourists. These attitudes are further reflected in the way that the New Age constructs the importance of moving to PSOC in particular. Building on the idea that the New Age community feels that they have a more enlightened vision for what plant medicine ceremonies should look like, they also believe they have a more spiritual and scientific idea about what sacred spaces mean. The New Age expats in PSOC claim a historic relationship with a sacred valley that goes beyond Quechuan understandings of the area. While the Quechuan people often talk about the Apus, meaning the spirits of the mountains to which they have a reciprocal relationship to, much of the New Age community believes that this area was actually touched by an advanced alien race called the Apunians, who came down to teach the ancient elders how to live in harmony with the earth. Many believe that the Apunians still have a relationship to the area, and so can most easily be contacted there from a practice called channeling. This practice uses a variety of techniques, plant medicine, meditation, etc., in order to contact ethereal beings, ranging from aliens to ancient spirits. Many of the expats cite this alien race as to why they felt called to move to PSOC. But even those who don't necessarily buy the idea of ancient aliens still feels like they have some connection to indigenous sacred sites. They believe that ancient indigenous peoples were far more connected to the earth and their spirituality, so if they felt called to a certain area, it must be because that area contained a strong spiritual energy. While many think of this as a celebration of indigenous knowledge, how it plays out is that non-indigenous spiritual seekers now feel that they have a legitimate claim over indigenous land and believe they are better equipped to understand ancient history than indigenous peoples themselves, which follows the playing Indian mindset to its final conclusion. The elimination of indigenous peoples from their practice is then translated to an elimination of indigenous peoples from their land, and that is why PSOC arguably represents a settler colonial project. Just as DeLoria spoke about a disillusion with urban industrialization, Lorenzo Veracini says that the basis for colonization is a perceived, unsolvable problem with the homeland that prompts the need to flee to some kind of nostalgic promised land. Veracini makes the comparison of the Protestants leaving England for a free new world to white flight, a time when white people in the United States fled the racial turmoil of the city to the pastoral, idyllic life of the suburbs. I argue the move to PSOC fits into this pattern as well. Many people in PSOC told me that the reason they moved away from their home countries was some kind of perceived threat ranging from the alleged dangers of genetically modified food or 5G cell service, to the increase of government surveillance and the brainwashing of mass media, or even taking it as far as to believe that there really is a shadow government built to block the messages that we should be receiving from the alien race trying to enlighten humanity. For them, PSOC represents the spiritually rich alternative to the corruption of home. But again, colonization in any of these instances is predicated by an elimination of existing natives, the view that the land is open for the taking. By discrediting the validity of indigenous practices and Quechuan understandings of the land, the New Age and PSOC has set themselves up to be the rightful heirs of these lifeways, and that is what is actively playing out in PSOC now. But settler colonial scholarship also acknowledges that it is unrealistic and questions the utility of everyone simply returning to their homelands and pretending colonization anywhere never happened. Instead, decolonization should be about imagining a future where the indigenous-settler relationship remains meaningful and ongoing as it is decolonized, and that a positive vision of a more meaningful and sustainable relationships with the places we inhabit and all its communities should continue to be brought forward. This vision of decolonization calls on researchers to speak with indigenous peoples and colonizers to understand their perspectives and try to facilitate negotiations of space and bridge building, with the hopes of returning agency and dignity to the indigenous peoples to whom colonization erases. It is about swaying power structures to the side of indigenous peoples, giving them a seat at the negotiation table over how their land is used. As people with cultural and economic power, primarily Western tourists can choose to make better decisions and contribute to a kind of tourism that uplifts indigenous communities and gives them a voice in how they want their practices and lifeways to be understood. Thank you for listening. I would like to thank Dr. Lemelson, Dr. Boom, and the Lemelson Honors Program for believing in undergraduate research. I'd like to thank my advisor, Dr. Hart, and all the professors who've been involved in teaching our cohort. And of course, I would like to thank the other members of my cohort, their contributions to my work, and my sanity.